Welcome to our deep dive. We're going to be in Exodus chapter 16 through 18, and we're going to be exploring a really fascinating concept, and that is God's providence. We'll be using insights from Dr. John Oswalt's lectures. Think of this as a journey through the wilderness with the Israelites, you know, and discovering how God prepares them for something extraordinary.
Yeah, it's amazing how this theme just continues to play out in the scriptures, people facing trials and questioning God's plan. And we're going to see that really play out in a big way as the Israelites transition from that euphoria of freedom to those harsh realities of the wilderness.
Yeah, let's jump right into Exodus 16. So the Israelites have just escaped Egypt. They've witnessed incredible miracles, but now they're hungry. And wouldn't you know it, they start complaining. It's almost comical how quickly they forget those miracles and just long for the meat pots of Egypt.
It is funny. You know, and Dr. Oswald actually makes a really fascinating point here. He suggests that their complaints aren't just about physical hunger. It's deeper than that. He argues that it reveals the psychological struggle to trust in God's provision even after experiencing it firsthand.
That's interesting. It's like they're stuck in this mentality of scarcity, even when they're surrounded by evidence of God's abundance. Yeah. Almost like they expect God to abandon them at any moment.
Exactly. And that fear drives them back to longing for that, quote, security, unquote, of Egypt, even though it was a place of oppression. Dr. Oswald draws a parallel to our own lives, you know, suggesting that we often do the same thing. We cling to familiar comforts, even if they're harmful, just because they feel predictable.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that, choosing the known devil over the unknown angel. But how does this connect to the concept of covenant that Dr. Oswald talks about?
Right. So a covenant's more than just a contract. It's this binding agreement based on relationship and commitment. The Israelites, they're on the verge of entering into a covenant with God at Mount Sinai. But they're still operating with that slave mentality, focused on immediate needs, not on the bigger picture of God's faithfulness.
So the arrival of manna is more than just a solution to their hunger problem. It's a test of their trust in God's covenant faithfulness.
Exactly. Think about the specific rules around the manna. Enough for each day, except for a double portion on Friday. It's like God saying, I will provide, but you need to rely on me daily. Not try to hoard or control.
Right. It's a daily reminder that they're not in control, that their survival depends on God's grace. Dr. Oswald points out that this must have been incredibly unnerving, waking up every morning for 40 years, wondering if the food would be there.
Yeah. It forced them to confront their deepest fears and insecurities. Are they going to trust in God's promise or revert to their old patterns of fear and self-reliance?
That's a powerful image. And then there's that double portion on Friday, which Dr. Oswald suggests foreshadows the Sabbath commandment.
Yes. It's like God is weaving these subtle hints into their daily routine, preparing them for that deeper meaning of the Sabbath, a day of rest and trust in God's provision.
This is starting to feel like a crash course in covenant living. They're learning to trust God for their daily bread, to rest in his timing, and to recognize his authority. But then they face another challenge, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In Exodus 17, we see a familiar pattern emerge. They arrive at Rephidim, and once again, there's no water. It's almost comical, isn't it? The Israelites are thirsty. Instead of looking to God, they immediately start complaining to Moses.
Yeah, it's like they've completely forgotten the Red Sea, the plagues, the manna, all these incredible displays of God's power. And it makes you wonder, how could they be so quick to doubt after witnessing those miracles?
It's a reminder that human nature tends towards doubt, even in the face of overwhelming evidence. Dr. Oswald suggests that this is a deliberate test. God is allowing them to experience these challenges to reveal the true state of their hearts.
So God instructs Moses to strike the rock at Horeb, and water miraculously flows out. But here's what caught my attention. Dr. Oswald emphasizes that it's the same staff that parted the Red Sea.
Oh, that's fascinating. What's fascinating about that detail is that it links those two events, highlighting God's consistent power and faithfulness. It's like God is saying, I am the same God who delivered you from Egypt, and I am the same God who will provide for you in the wilderness.
But Dr. Oswald doesn't stop there. He connects this event to a similar one in Numbers 20, where Moses makes a grave mistake.
Yeah, this is where it gets really interesting. Decades later, another generation faces a water shortage. Moses, instead of speaking to the rock as God instructed, strikes it again. And this seemingly small act has huge consequences.
Yes. Moses disobeys God, and as a result, he doesn't get to enter the promised land. That seems like a harsh punishment for what appears to be a minor infraction. What's the deeper meaning here?
Well, Dr. Oswald suggests that by striking the rock, Moses essentially took credit for the miracle. Instead of acknowledging God's power, it's a subtle but significant shift. Instead of pointing people to God, He drew attention to himself.
That's a profound insight. It's a warning against letting our successes and accomplishments inflate our egos, leading us to take credit for what is ultimately God's work.
Exactly. And it's a temptation we all face, isn't it? To think I've got this or do this on my own, forgetting that every good thing comes from God.
Wow. It's a stark reminder that even the most faithful among us can stumble when we lose sight of God's grace. So we've seen God provide food and water in miraculous ways. But the Israelites' journey is far from over, right?
Right. The wilderness is a proving ground. And the lessons keep coming. In Exodus 18, we encounter this really fascinating character, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law. And what's interesting is that Jethro isn't an Israelite. He's an outsider who brings this fresh perspective to the situation.
I love that God uses someone from outside the chosen people to offer guidance. It reinforces that idea that God's wisdom can come from unexpected sources. But what exactly does Jethro see that the Israelites and even Moses seem to be missing?
He sees a system on the verge of collapse. Moses is trying to single-handedly lead and judge this entire nation. I mean, imagine the lines, the complaints, the sheer exhaustion. Jethro, with his outsider's perspective, recognizes that this isn't sustainable.
It's a classic leadership problem, isn't it? Trying to do everything yourself, not delegating, burning out in the process. I'm curious, what specific advice does Jethro give Moses to address this?
Well, Jethro's advice is brilliant in its simplicity. He tells Moses to appoint capable leaders who possess four key qualities. They must be capable, God-fearing, honest, and hate bribes. These individuals would then handle smaller disputes, leaving Moses free to focus on those weightier matters, and more importantly, to seek God's guidance.
Those qualities seem incredibly relevant even for leaders today, but I'm particularly struck by that emphasis on being God-fearing. What do you think Jethro meant by that in this context?
Well, Dr. Oswald suggests that Jethro, even though he wasn't an Israelite, recognized that true leadership flows from a recognition of God's authority. It's not about personal ambition or power, but about serving God and his people.
That's a powerful point. It challenges that modern notion of leadership as being solely about charisma or business acumen. Jethro's advice suggests that humility and a reliance on God are essential qualities for effective leadership.
Absolutely. And it ties back to that concept of covenant. These leaders aren't just managing a workforce. They are shepherds of God's people, responsible for guiding them according to God's principles.
It makes you wonder if this organizational structure was part of God's plan all along. Was he using Jethro to prepare the Israelites for a more structured form of governance, something that they would need as they transitioned from this wandering band of escapees to a nation with laws and a covenant with God?
That's a fascinating question. And Dr. Oswald hints at that possibility. He points out that this seemingly mundane event, receiving organizational advice, occurs within the same three chapter span as the manna and water miracles.
You're right. It suggests a deliberate sequencing, as if God is intentionally weaving together these seemingly disparate events to achieve a larger purpose.
And that purpose, Dr. Oswald argues, is to prepare the Israelites for their encounter with God at Mount Sinai and the receiving of the Ten Commandments. He suggests that each event, from the manna to the water, to Jethro's advice, serves as a stepping stone, gradually shaping the Israelites' understanding of God and their relationship with him.
It's like God is using the wilderness to refine their character, to teach them trust, dependence, and obedience, preparing them for something far greater than just physical survival.
Precisely. And Dr. Oswald challenges us to see the parallels in our own lives. We all go through wilderness experiences, times of testing and uncertainty. But God uses those experiences to shape us, to refine our faith, and to prepare us for a deeper relationship with him.
So as we stand on the cusp of Mount Sinai with the Israelites, about to witness the giving of the law, what key insights can we glean from their journey thus far?
Well, we've seen how God provides for our needs, often in unexpected ways. We've learned about the importance of trusting in God's covenant faithfulness, even when things are difficult. And we've been reminded that true leadership flows from humility and a dependence on God.
It's an incredible tapestry of events woven together by God's providence. But I'm particularly intrigued by Dr. Oswald's observation that the giving of the law at Sinai marks a significant shift in how God reveals himself to humanity.
Yeah, he highlights the transition from God primarily revealing himself through those acts of power and deliverance. Think of the Exodus, the Red Sea, the manna, to revealing himself through his character and his covenant. It's a move from this is what I can do for you to this is who I am and this is how we relate to each other.
That's a profound distinction. It suggests that the law isn't just a set of rules to follow. It's an invitation into a deeper relationship with God based on his unchanging character and his unwavering commitment to his people.
Exactly. And that relationship, Dr. Oswalt argues, is rooted in trust, obedience, and a deep understanding of who God is. He uses the analogy of a parent teaching a child to walk. The parent provides support, guidance, and boundaries, not to restrict the child's freedom, but to help them navigate the world safely and confidently.
That's a beautiful analogy. So the Israelites have experienced God's power. They've tasted his provision. They've even received wise counsel from unexpected sources. Now they're about to encounter God's law, his blueprint for living in right relationship with him and with each other.
And just like the Israelites, we too are invited into this covenant relationship with God. We're given his word, his spirit, and his grace to guide us on our own journeys of faith.
It's amazing to think, after all they've been through, they're still just at the beginning of their journey. They're about to receive God's law, a defining moment in their history.
Yeah. And this brings us to a really thought-provoking point that Dr. Oswalt makes. If they needed this much preparation before receiving the Ten Commandments, what does that say about the significance of God's law?
That's a great question. It suggests that encountering God's law isn't something to be taken lightly. It's not just a list of rules to follow, but something that requires a transformed heart and a deep understanding of who God is.
Exactly. The Israelites needed to experience God's provision and faithfulness firsthand. They needed to learn trust and obedience through the challenges of the wilderness. They needed to be humbled and stripped of their self-reliance. Only then were they ready to receive God's law, not as a burden, but as a gift.
It makes me think about how we often approach God's law today. Do we see it as a set of restrictions or as a guide to a more fulfilling life?
That's a crucial question to consider. Dr. Oswalt emphasizes that the giving of the law at Sinai represents this profound shift in how God relates to humanity. It's the establishment of a covenant, a binding agreement based on relationship and mutual commitment.
So it's not just about following rules, but about entering into a relationship with the God who revealed himself as powerful provider, protector, and yes, even organizational consultant.
Precisely. And that relationship is founded on trust, obedience, and a deep understanding of who God is. The law then becomes a framework for living in right relationship with God and with each other.
It sounds like the Israelites are being invited to participate in something much bigger than themselves. They're becoming a nation set apart by their covenant with God.
Yes, and Dr. Oswalt highlights that this covenant isn't just about external rituals or legalistic adherence. It's about an inward transformation, a change of heart that aligns our desires with God's will.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. And I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a sense of awe at the intricate ways God works in our lives.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating exploration of God's providence. We've seen how he provides for our needs, guides us through difficult decisions, protects us from our enemies, and even sends wise counsel from unexpected sources.
But perhaps the most important takeaway is this. God is intimately involved in every detail of our lives, shaping us, teaching us, and drawing us closer to himself.
And just like the Israelites standing at the foot of Mount Sinai, we have a choice to make. Will we embrace the challenge of knowing God more deeply? Will we surrender to his transformative work in our lives? Will we see his law as a gift that guides us toward a more fulfilling life, lived in harmony with him and with others?
That's a powerful thought to ponder as we conclude this deep dive. Thank you for joining us on this journey through Exodus. May we all continue to seek a deeper understanding of God's providence and his invitation to a life of covenant relationship with him.